I'm Tom Slaw, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. I just love bringing in these founders and CEOs of AI-native startups. Recently, I reconnected with an old TSIA member that I knew from her days at Ericsson, and she founded a company that helps companies in Sweden successfully leverage AI. Sophie Elfin-Helberg is the CEO and co-founder of Substorm, and she has some strong, insightful perspectives on where the practical ROI exists for leveraging AI. So let's get the insight engine humming here. Sophie, it's great to see you again. I don't know how many years it's been since we've actually had a conversation. I know it's been a while, but I know you've been busy since last time I talked to you. And so maybe before we get into some of the questions here, just tell us a little bit about Substorm and maybe just your catalyst for starting the company, you know, why you were inspired to do that.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. It's so fun to be here. And yes, it was quite a few years, I think 2011 or something.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Okay, time flies. Met up face to face. So yeah, time flies, really. And at the time, I was in Ericsson and Ericsson Research and telecommunication. And I would say, since back in the days when I did my PhD in the kind of around the topic and embedded system and complex product development and so on, I've been thinking of how we can actually support industry in a better way with these new technologies. So I've been working in the area for so many years, since the early 2000s. And
so
I've been quite frustrated in the kind of large corporations that it goes so slow.
Yeah,
it's like how we transform enterprises and so on. And then in I think it was 2018, I met my co-founder when I was in another telecommunication on the operator side, Telia company in Sweden. So I kind of moved from
provider
base station, provider to operator. And I had a lot of fun there. But then we started to discuss whether we shouldn't start this company. And I was like hunting for a partner to do it because I didn't want to do it alone. I wanted to scale and actually provide some value to especially the Swedish industry that has fallen a little bit behind.
Okay.
And that was the kind of starting point. Me being a little bit frustrated coming from that technology, always working in the forefront of technology and trying to kind of impact and change the business models of a company with new technologies. So that kind of made me like, yes, let's start a company and jump the enterprise safe career stuff and start a company working like in the forefront of technology. And here I am,
you know,
I think 7 years later.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time, quite frankly, to start a new company because there is a lot of new technology in play. There is the opportunity to really transform the way that other companies are operating. So I think it's super exciting. I know you have been working in machine learning, right, since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And here we are now in 2026, and we've had our ChatGPT moment, you know, 3 years ago. So tell me what is the same and what's different from, let's say, back in, you know, the early 2000s when you look at this technology.
Yeah, that's a super interesting question because I really have to think about it. As you have, I've been living the hype and the like pre-hype as well. But I think still we're trying a little bit to solve the same problem as in early 2000, especially within industry and manufacturing industry. And we haven't really kind of got the scaling and implementation going since then. Back then, it was not a hype. The ones that were working with machine learning at the time, we were not that cool, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Sweden, it was totally ice age when it came to AI. So in that sense, there were no hype. It was very much in forefront of technology, but there was a lot of kind of, we were hunting for data. We were trying to kind of transfer tacit knowledge from people's brain into explicit knowledge. And that's also what we're trying to do right now. And now we're actually succeeding a little bit better because back then we didn't have the computing power. Yeah. And we didn't really have the data and we needed to annotate all the data manually and we needed to write all the kind of, if we work with, for instance,
just on the
cases.
Data side, I mean, just the data side, I mean, you think about IoT. I mean, if you go back 26 years, most equipment deployed in manufacturing environments, it's not connected. It's not throwing up data automatically. So that had to be incredibly manual to try to say, hey, do we know what's going on here and capturing that? In today's world, I mean, that is one of the massive engines that feeds AI is the fact that stuff is so connected and you can get volumes and volumes of data at the touch of a button to help, you know, feed your model. So that's huge.
And nowadays, like in this hype, we get the data from totally different kind of angles and from, you know, the internet in a totally different way that you can kind of combine data in. If you look into industry, it's still quite messy to get the right data from the right sensors and it's scattered between vendors and you have to buy the data and so on. So there is still kind of, challenges there. Yeah. But we have a huge potential to actually doing stuff now, I think, for real.
So working computing power, we do have at least more data in play than sometimes it can be hard to get to. So those are things that are different. But when you look at this and you're working with customers, et cetera, and you're looking at the landscape, what still feels the same if you go back, you know, 20-some years? Where do you say, hey, this rhymes. This is very similar.
People are still afraid of increasing the level of automation in any process. Yeah, I think it's the same kind of narrative. For me, it's like we have gone through this narrative so many times, like people expect to lose their job. And yes, that might happen. On the other side, we kind of increase the level of value we provide as a human being into a certain process and into an organization if we don't have to do this manual task. And we have gone through this like 15, 20 years ago, and through the kind of when IT and the internet came, and in the 80s when the computer came, and when we started to automate factories back in the days and robotics and everything like that. So I think the human behavior of how to kind of interact and how to meet new technology is still the same, and it's still a challenge. So I kind of reuse a lot of what I learned back in the days.
Yeah.
When it comes to change management and people and how to implement new technology.
Yeah,
because we tend to behave in the same way.
Yeah.
So
that's super fascinating. You know, I'd be curious because, you know, you can give us a unique perspective on Sweden. So I was asked a question in a webinar yesterday about difference between Canada, the United States around AI and financial models, et cetera. And I said, look, I haven't analyzed that. But I do think that one thing that is emerging already, you can see in some of the data, is that different countries are having very different sort of cultural postures toward AI. And what is super interesting, and I'm going to contrast what I've read about the most, is the United States versus China. So China has a very practical approach to AI, right? They are basically saying, look, we're not looking for AGI. We're not going to, and they're also very bullish. The general population is pretty bullish on the technology. They want to learn about it. They want to use it. People see applications for both personal and business. And again, they see a lot of practical applications. So they're leaning into that hard. The United States, surprisingly, has a lot of resistance culturally. I think it's the things you're talking about. A lot of fear, right? So you have power users, and I meet them every day, you know, who are just like, oh my gosh, they know it can change the way they're doing business. They know it can change. It's got a lot of personal use cases. They're all over it. But you have a huge chunk of the population who doesn't have faith in this, is or super nervous. Give us the lens on Sweden. How would you say culturally, and I know you're dealing with government institutions and other things as customers, where do they fall on that spectrum, you know, between the Chinese perspective and the US perspective?
Yeah, I think we need to go back 20 years to actually get that perspective, because Sweden kind of stopped investing from kind of the from the state's point of view in AI during early 2000. They kind of draw back the investment and waiting for something to happen. While, for instance, Canada continue to invest, and of course the US, also Finland, our neighbor, continue to invest. And that meant that for a long time, it was the AI machine learning area was for academia or the really big companies that actually had a research organization.
Yeah,
so it became like untouchable for people in general. So when the kind of hype came, people were like, oh, what's this? It's totally new. We have never seen it before. People were so surprised. And the community that has been working with it for such a long time, we were like, oh, finally, someone did something great that actually kind of get traction. So there's a lot of people running for AI now, but running for Gen AI. They kind of, the AI field is equal to generative AI. Yes, exactly. So you get a certain behavior in that, and then you have a part of the population that is like modest and maybe doesn't care, but they use AI every day, but they don't really kind of reckon. And then we also have these that are quite afraid. And as we're also heavy on heavy industry and process industry, people get a little bit afraid because they've been through the kind of the race for automation and increased efficiency and so on. But as I said, it's like the background of AI being for the people in academia or the professors or the PhD students and so on, and not in the hands of the people. And now when we put it in the hands of the people, people are getting like, wow, we need to start companies. We need to do this. And then they just run. And that's super nice to see. Yeah, but I think we will expect some bloodbath in that sense.
Yeah.
When it comes to company investments.
Yeah. So, you know, you made a comment to me where you said, you know, the tech community, you know, runs in one direction sometimes, right? And that can't be good. So when you look at AI right now, and you already mentioned, you know, Gen AI, a lot of people are all over that. What do you think is the most overinvested direction right now? And what's the most underinvested in terms of the potential of AI capabilities?
I think if I look into kind of the Swedish, I don't know, like everything, but my feeling, and that I'm working and have a lot of contact with a lot of investors, I think the kind of opportunistic generative AI solution that doesn't really solve a real problem, or it just solves a problem for an individual, I think that is overinvested. There's so many companies that pops up that kind of solves very generic processes on top of something. And I'm a little bit afraid that we're wasting a lot of money on just running on the Gen AI and not combining it with the more traditional, like machine learning. We know how it works. We know what processes we can use it for and how to scale that. So I think the risk with it to running towards the kind of opportunistic part is that we're missing out on what we've actually learned the past 20 years. Use that.
And when you think about these solutions, and I'll say sort of horizontally versus vertical, right? So somebody comes up with a solution, they say, look, it can serve a bunch of different industries or whatever, and it's a solution that does that, versus a solution that is really tuned into vertical. And again, I know you do work with, you know, government, they, you know, I'm sure they have very specific use cases that they're going after. What are you more bullish on in terms of long-term success, business model success? The horizontal that solves, you know, a problem for lots of people, or one where you really can go deep within a vertical industry?
Yeah, from my perspective, I think where we can go deep, because the generic like solutions for many people, I think the, you know, the big tech companies that is already onto this, they will solve that.
Yeah.
It will create value for a lot of people, but maybe not create so much value kind of in terms of new companies, new hires and so on. So I'm going for the vertical. That's my bet, because I think there's a lot of potential there that we haven't looked into when it comes to the field of AI technologies and machine learning. We haven't really reaped the benefit.
You and I are very simpatico there for a couple of reasons. And there's a body of work that we have, we call AI economics, and we're just very fixated on what is a profitable business model going to look like in the AI area for tech providers, right? And I think in the era of AI, you know, let's pick on something, you know, like document management. These AI engines are going to create more and more sophisticated document management capabilities that will be generic, that any company could take advantage of. There's so much value there, but I think that's going to be very commoditized. And like you said, these big players are going to put that on the table, whether it's an OpenAI or Google, whatever. But again, we'll pick on government. If you have very unique needs as a government institution around how you're dealing with documents, which is different requirement, you know, and you can solve that and say, look, we can bring in unique capabilities here and really optimize to that to get you very specific improvements, ROIs, whatever. I think that's where the money's going to be. I mean, I really do believe that. And I think we're going to see that play out here over the next couple years. The economics of enterprise tech are breaking. AI startups are threatening the domain of long-established enterprise technology providers. Yet, it is unclear exactly how technology providers will drive profitable revenue in the AI era. TSIA has always been focused on what it takes to have a profitable business model in enterprise tech. AI economics is a body of actionable TSIA research that is digging into the future of tech business models. How will AI solutions be priced? What does the next generation tech services portfolio look like? And why does TSI believe that it is not the end of tech services, but the era of services? Go to tsi.com/AI economics to learn the answers. As we talk about, you know, where the money is, so where are you seeing some of the biggest ROI in industry with your customers who you're dealing with when it comes to AI and machine learning capability?
Well, right now, I would say like it's operational efficiency. We see a lot of like personnel or efficiency gains on individual levels, but I think that is quite overrated. I don't think the value will be enough there. So it's basically back to the old boring problems in traditional processes. So we can use the technology to actually transform those processes, as we was talking about, like huge enterprises that has legacy. I think now it's the opportunity to actually turn how we look at like processes in these companies around. And I think there is a lot of kind of untapped potential in there. Like old, boring problems that no one wants to handle or just avoid handling. Everything from document management, as you say, to what we're doing, like quality control in industry, which is like, it's not fancy. It's not like, wow. It's just solving a problem that no one really wants to touch because it's so boring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I play that back, and again, we are very simpatico here. I mean, you spend a lot of time talking to companies, what are you doing with AI, what use cases are working, et cetera. I think that we have barely scratched the surface on the potential for most companies. And so that's number one. We are still in early days here of the true potential of AI. Second thing is you see a lot of companies, you know, they'll be like, hey, let's get everybody a Copilot license and, you know, see how that goes. And you're right. You know, that's not going to be the big bang for the buck. I mean, so I can write an email faster. I can create a presentation for a customer faster. There are gains there. I mean, that's really nice. But I agree with you. The big ROIs are going to, when companies can take their complex end-to-end processes on a supply chain or whatever, you know, and say, look, we are going to really use this technology to optimize it. And I'll give you an example of one of those use cases. One of the early cases we saw is Dell started to use machine learning for spare parts. You know, when do I need to actually send a brand new part? When can it be repaired, et cetera, around field services? And they shaved off millions and billions of dollars by just being efficient in that just one use case right there, right? But that is a big, hairy enterprise process on how you're, you know, determining that. And so, and again, we're just scratching the surface on that. But another topic I want to talk with you, because again, you are leveraging this technology, engaging with customers. We do believe deeply at TSIA that the whole customer engagement model is a technology enabler, that, you know, what you're doing changes with AI compared to if you were selling a CRM system or you were helping on, you know, a traditional piece of software, you were trying to help, you know, customers implement it. And, you know, you've said that your stance is there's no proof of concepts, no innovation projects. We want to get value from day one. That's your mantra. So tell us a little bit about that approach and how you actually make that real with the customer.
Yeah, and this is actually kind of based on my experience for the past 15, 20 years in large corporations, spending so much money in proof of concepts, innovation projects that didn't fly and we didn't learn because we didn't kind of brought the people with us. We kind of only tested the technology. We didn't focus on the change management. And when I started this company, I was saying like, we need to support our customers. So no proof of concept. We need to be frank with them and say, no, you can do a pilot, but that should be put in production, real production and generate value. Otherwise, we shall not do it for you because you will just spend money on something that you will kind of drop later on. But when you do this, we will support you with change management during the time and educate your employees as well to help you bring them up to speed so you actually start using the solution you're buying from us. So we have kind of combined the technology and the change management competence that we have and offered it as a package. So with this product, you also get change management. So you get kind of the learning and you get the technology to stick in the organization, because that is a huge problem. It doesn't stick. You could introduce some new tool and then the employees just like, nah, we're just using the same old process because they're afraid, or it's easier because it's a threshold to go over with new tech.
And so now if I play some of that back, I mean, we are big believers that in this AI era, that this is the era of services. Customers need help here. Well, you just said, you cannot just say, look, here's this whiz bang technology. You've got to put, in a sense, a service wrapper around it to help with the change management. I mean, we believe deeply with these AI solutions, as you know, the technology is evolving so quickly. It's not like you're one and done. Even if you pilot something, you stand it up, 3 months later, 6 months later, there's new value unlocked that you could be getting. There's new, it's like the gift that keeps giving. So there's like ongoing value management services that customers need. And I think, you know, we tell all of our technology providers, I mean, you got to lean into that. Because the other thing I'll say, because you're talking about, you know, companies spend all this money, they don't get a return. The thing I notice in the current environment, sort of the perspective with companies that are buying technology, the days of like theoretical ROI are kind of like gone. CFOs, CEOs, they're like, I do not want to write checks. And you could tell me I'm going to get some type of ROI 6 months or 12 months or 2 years from now. I'm kind of done with that. If I'm going to write a check, I want you, technology provider, to tell me how you're going to get me there. And I don't want to take years to get there. So I think there's been a real sea change in how people view their spending on technology. And I'm curious with your customers, are you seeing a different, I mean, you're pushing them saying, hey, we should be doing pilots. We should be getting value. But do you also see that that's more of what their expectations are? You know, what's it like in Sweden there?
Yeah, it depends a little bit. It's a little hard when it comes to like AI as a concept in Sweden, because if we say we're an AI company, it opens a lot of doors. Mm-hmm. So we get the first conversation. But then if we talk too much about the AI in the product, then they get a little bit scared.
Oh, interesting.
And then they want to write the AI strategy and an AI policy before they can buy this, because they don't have the confidence that they could actually handle this type of product. And then we need to be very kind of aware that, but this is image analysis combined with this in a camera. It's not going anywhere. So in that sense, it opens the door, AI, and people want to invest. But in the other hand, they feel that they need to invest in knowledge or policies and strategies before they can actually go, because they have been so scared.
So this is a really good thread here. This is very interesting to me. So I can tell you again, so the clock's been ticking for about 3 years on this. When I first started talking to companies about, what do you think about AI? What are you doing with it? US-based companies. There was a lot of caution. I mean, I heard a lot of people going, well, you know, we need governance, we need policies, we're not sure, we're afraid about, you know, hallucination, you know, abuse, all these things, right? And so people were coming up with reasons to pump the brakes, for sure. Then it became FOMO. Then it was like fear of missing out. And then I saw this 180, right, where companies were like, we got to be doing AI stuff, right? Can you bar the door? This is like, you know, we're all in. And so I heard a lot less about governance and all those types of things. Having said that, I mean, I think that the right approach is in the middle of that, which is, I think as companies, they've got to be willing to lean in. But also, I do think companies need help with governance. Like they need to understand how to, like, where is this data going? And where is this stuff going to go? And I'll give you a very simple example. A classic AI use case is around now helping sift through all resumes. You got to make sure you have a model that is not creating bias there. Right. Mm-hmm. So you need to have some governance and some understanding and scaffolding around that, because you can quickly roll that out and find out that, oh my gosh, you know, we introduced all this incredible prejudice into our, you know, hiring process. So I do think there's a good, healthy middle ground there. So, and I understand, but I think it's also, we'll go back to the culturally. I think different cultures, you know, the rate of speed there and caution is, you can see this variance, right? Some cultures are like, we got to have it, forget about governance. And other cultures are saying, whoa, 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 if we don't get that right first, we are not piloting. So it's super interesting how this...
But in Europe in general, we're very good at regulating stuff. We're super good. Like we have the AI Act and everything, and it's very good, but it scares companies off, I would say. On the other hand, we in Sweden, we're quite good in the innovation side and push new technologies. So I would say it depends on the company and industry. And most of all, it depends on the decision maker that is sitting there in front of you. If it's someone that has the guts, can see the risk, but can see the kind of upside of it. So it's very much still dependent on individuals that feel safe enough a little bit bold, but have like all the data in place and want to kind of make that bet. And for us, over the years, we were working a lot with like finding biases in just what you said, resumes and so on, like 4 or 5 years ago before ChatGPT was released and the kind of hype came. We kind of put that project away because the ChatGPT and the open source models was kind of much better than ours.
Yeah, right.
But still, it's like you work with different stuff. And in the end, what we have seen is taking away the complexity of the problem you solve, make it as simple as possible for people to understand and not scare them away, and then showcase that it actually works. And that's what we do. Like, for instance, with the quality control part, we narrow it down, we make it very simple, everybody can understand it, they feel safe, and then you can start working from a small scale and then onwards.
So we're chipping a little bit on sort of customer personas here. And so being an AI native company that opens doors, okay, that's great. Now you get in there and not every customer is going to be a great customer for you. They're going to be too cautious or too whatever. So what questions do you ask them to basically help qualify and say, okay, I think this is going to be a good partnership? How do you get that green light from your perspective?
Yeah, I usually start with the why. Their why. Why are we sitting here? Or why do you want to do this? Why do you want, why are you interested in our product from your perspective? What do you want to achieve? Like, how does it fit into your business strategy?
Yeah.
Because if they don't have thought about that, it's most probably the hype thing.
Back to the phone. They don't want to miss out. They don't know what they're missing.
And it could be okay. Absolutely. It could be okay. But it's a little bit of a red flag if they don't understand the why. And then who owns the initiative in the organization? If it's IT organization that owns the initiative to bring in this product, then we have a problem. We have a problem.
Why is that?
At least in Sweden, they want to own the AI-like concept and keep the power inside IT. Now I will get so many of my former colleagues like, no, that's not the case. But it is. And then they tend to forget to bring in HR in the conversation or communication or strategy or the business as such. So there will be so many pitfalls while putting these solutions into production, so the change management will not happen. So that is a major red flag for me if it's like just IT owning this.
Yeah. So what I hear there is, and again, from the change, because we've already keep talking about how important change management is, what you want to see like out of the gate to say, you know, why are they doing this? You want to see strong that they thought like, hey, this is where we think we have some opportunity with AI. They've got some thinking behind that. And number two, I think what I'm hearing is, you want to see the business users engage, not just IT. You want to see whether it's an HR application or it's a sales, whatever it is, or it's, you know, like you say, it's an automation. You want to see the people that own those processes involved in the conversation. Otherwise,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the most successful projects and programs I've been part of for the past 15 years is especially when a service organization owns the project, the budget, and owns the value, and also to take home the effect of it, cost cut and everything, because then it happens and they feel accountable for it.
Yeah. That's what you want to see.
And I think that is the most successful programs I've been into. And that is also what I see. It's much more successful when you also kind of sell in a product.
I'll tell you a little story here. So we have a TSI member that from a very large European-based tech company. And they, a couple years now, we've been telling our members, you've got to start rolling up your sleeves around AI use cases. This is, you know, there's real capabilities here, blah, blah, blah. We see success. And so he was listening and they really weren't doing a lot. And they sort of had this IT group that was piloting or experimenting with capabilities. And he finally got nervous that maybe they, you know, he owns services. Maybe, you know, we're falling behind. So he looked at each one of his direct reports and he said, as part of your MBO this year, you have to go figure out an AI use case that is applicable to your part of the service business and get an ROI, right? And get it across the goal line. You have to do that. And he said that was a game changer Because what you just said, now they feel, I have to close that loop. I'm responsible for understanding the technology, understanding where, and getting my employees to adopt it in the whole nine yards. And so he saw this like going from nothing using AI to like now use case after use case being successfully driven within the organization. So I think that concept of ownership and that closed loop is still a thing that a lot of companies are missing in terms of how they're trying to roll AI out. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. And I've got a follow-up question here. So let's say even when you have that, let's say, you know, perfect customer persona, good scenario going here, you have ownership from the business user, things could still go off the rails. You know, I mean, there still could be problems. Yeah. And I'm curious, where do you see companies struggling the most? Is it data? Is it just change management? Is it they don't really understand their workflows? I mean, where do they struggle the most from your perspective?
My spontaneous kind of thought is politics. Politics. Straight
politics
through.
For all of our, yes. All of our U.S. politics.
Yeah, yeah. Internal politics in that sense. Yeah, that's really heavy. And I shouldn't get surprised, but I still get surprised how tough it can be to just navigate that, or how tough it is for the customer to navigate that. So that was not the answer you wanted, but that's answer I'm going to give you.
But let's get into it. And when you say politics, is it like people want control of what's going on, or they don't want to change? That's the thing I see. People are like, hey, this is my world, and I really don't want to change what's going on in my world. So that's where the politics kicks in. But just put a little bit more color on that. Like, what kind of behaviors do you see?
Yeah, it's a lot about ownership.
Yeah.
That some part of the organization wants to own the AI initiatives. So it kind of doesn't communicate with the rest of the organization and misses the use cases, for instance, from the business. But also that a lot of top management is a bit afraid to show they don't know, they don't have the knowledge.
Yeah.
So they need to ask questions that is, I would say, is a little bit uncomfortable, because it kind of shows off that you don't know everything. And like for me, I don't expect anyone to know everything about AI and machine learning. Yeah. I've been working for such a long time within the field and I know nothing, basically. You need to be humble in that sense. So it's people's behavior and the politics, and that combined, it's not a like nice cocktail for you to be able to scale these solutions, so to say. And then, of course, it's security can, of course, hinder companies from actually putting things in production. But usually the companies and the customers are solving this, but it can take a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to go through the process, and it could be a very rigid one before the lawyers reckon that, no, this is okay, actually, to do. Yeah. And then you can do pretty much whatever suddenly.
Yeah. As I listen to you, I mean, what's interesting is, again, I believe deeply, this is the most disruptive enterprise technology I've ever seen in my life. I mean, by far, right? And so we should not be surprised that because it has the potential to be so disruptive, there is going to be a lot of angst around it. And that angst is going to show up, like you're talking about change management. It's going to show up with politics like we've never seen before, because it's just going to revolutionize the way companies, who's doing what, you know. And so we should expect that friction and not underestimate. So, you know, the technology's there, it can do wonderful things, but you actually have to navigate all of that to stick the landing and like that. And I'm curious, sort of related to that, because I, you know, one thing that caught my eye looking at what you guys were doing was the fact that you're working with government institutions in Sweden. And yeah. I think about here in the US, I think about procurement cycles. I think about just all the hurdles you go through when you're dealing with the government as opposed to private industry. So tell me a little bit about that experience of selling them on this revolutionary technology, but you're going into government institutions that typically like to be super cautious. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, from the beginning, when we started the company, we said that, no, we will not go into the government, organization, public sector. Yeah. No, it takes too much time and such an effort, and we're too small, basically. And there's a very rigid system in Sweden for you as a municipality or a governmental organization, how you can buy.
Yeah.
And you always compete on price. And that's very tough when you're kind of experts in the field.
Yeah, right.
Then you have a higher price on your solutions. But actually what we did, we built quite a few minimal valuable products based on what we, for the past 5-6 years, based on what we saw out in the market that was needed. And quite a lot of those were related to document management and in Europe, the GDPR regulations, type of regulations and laws and stuff like that. So we built a number of minimal viable products and tested that basically out with customers. And then we saw that there was an increase in asking from government organization exactly these type of solutions. Then we thought that, maybe it's worth kind of entering into these type of tenders and try this out. And that's what we did. And we kind of blew the competitors away because we could already do what everybody else theoretically described that they should do, basically.
Yeah. You had MVP. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we were like, we can actually kind of cut our price and we know it works because we have done it. We know how to scale it because we know the infrastructure needed. And often they want it on-prem and that makes it a little bit easier for us because it's very sensitive data.
Yeah.
So, so in that sense, we kind of started and it was not intentionally. And then we ended up with some huge customers, really heavy ones. So,
I love that story because I think, it speaks to the reality of how selling tech to large institutions is changing. Again, it's not about going in and saying, you've got this RFP, I got to click all these things off. And then in theory, I can go build this something for you over the next, year, whatever. Your route to market there was the fact that, look, with AI, if we know what we're doing, we can stand these MVPs up. We can make it tangible. We can show them. And that's what wins the day. And I think that time to value, compressing that is a super critical capability in today's...
Yeah, in the end, it created trust. And in these kind of circumstances, the trust is extremely important.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting for government, regardless of the country, governments are just ripe for leveraging AI, just right. They've got a lot of data, a lot of convoluted processes. So to deliver their services, I just think that there are so many wonderful use cases to be unlocked there. I think it's going to be a game changer. I'm watching the clock. I got one more question for you because we first met, you're a very large company, very traditional tech company. Now you're at an AI startup that you started. Tell me a little bit about really what's different there, what you find, and besides the fact that you're smaller and you're more nimble, but what do you feel is different in the AI era as you start and grow a company?
Oh, the pace, it's tremendous, when you're small and you have to do basically everything that you do in a large company, but in a very small scale. Yeah. You need to run fast and you need to be super flexible and change. You need to be able to change strategy or business model in a month, the past 5 years, because we're in the AI area. So that's the huge difference from this slow, massive organizations.
Let's build our 5-year plan. Let's build our 5-year plan.
Yes, but it's fun. And I like it, but you have to be a little bit weird to do it, I think. A little bit crazy to actually buy into that fast movement. But I always stand up for my choice to quit the enterprise career and start my own company and scale it. And what's also different, of course, you feel so much more accountable for the company, for the employees, for the customers. So when it goes ups and down, of course, it hasn't been a kind of straight line, straight up. It has gone up. And then we had COVID. It was hysterical. And then it feels like deep in to your heart. It kind of, the pressure you feel as an entrepreneur is way beyond what you feel in these large organizations. Although you are in management position of those large organizations, you cannot compare it. Although we're a small company, it kind of, it gets to you in a different way.
Yeah. You're on the hook for a lot. Are you finding, because of AI, that you're able to scale just much more efficiently in terms of, you know, I talk to a lot of these startups and they say, look, you know, if I was starting a traditional SaaS company 10 years ago, I'd have to have X amount of engineers, I'd have to have, you know, the X amount of salespeople and all this, but I can fire this thing up with a lot smaller number of people because we, you know, just our ability to be productive and get stuff done is just exponential. Are you feeling the benefits of that?
Yes, kind of in 2019 when we started, it was totally different from now. Yeah. Like in six, 7 years, it has changed. I would say we're much more efficient in that sense now in coding and delivering code and kind of using automation in totally different way that we could do before. And also in marketing and sales. Yeah. Because when you're a small company, you don't bring in like, oh, we need a marketing person and and a salesperson and just add on. You need to be very aware of your like overhead in that sense. So make the marketing and also the sales more efficient. That we have really benefited from that during the past years, I would say, to be able to scale it.
Yeah, that is super interesting. I really do believe that in tech, the traditional organizational structures we've had, the way we've structured that, which has been pretty much the same thing I've seen for the last 35, 40 years in tech. I mean, they really, these org structures have not really changed. But I do believe we are going to see different organizational models, a lot more fluidity and responsibilities, et cetera, because the technology is just going to allow us to operate fundamentally different. I don't care if it's selling, marketing, servicing, like you said, developing product. It's just going to be just so different. And I think we're all learning right now what that's going to look like. So it's exciting. It's stressful, but exciting.
But I don't think we even know the possibilities when it comes to kind of totally changing the processes, how we work, because we use our old mental models of how we do stuff. And it will be extremely interesting to see the coming 10 years, how we kind of turn stuff around and what will work and what will not work. Yeah. I'm super curious about that.
Every founder I've spoken to in these AI startups, they've been in tech for a while. So they have, to your point, they have the mental models that they grew up in. Maybe they worked at an Oracle, or maybe they worked at a Salesforce, or maybe they worked at a Cisco or whatever. They have those models. I really do look forward to when we start seeing this next generation of tech entrepreneurs that literally, maybe they are, you know, graduated, you know, they are graduating college right now. And they're like, hey, like my whole tech life has been surrounded by AI. Like, you know, I grew up coding in an AI-enabled world, and see how they approach things without the old models. It's, I think it's going to be super interesting to see how
the AI natives. We've talked about like digital natives before when it comes to companies. Now we have AI natives. So that will be, I guess, we're so old, so they will just wipe us from the market. We've been here for too long.
Yeah, that's right.
But but sometimes you need the experience as well when we start to talking about relations and behavior among people.
Oh, for sure.
So that will be important.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting times. Well, I really appreciate reconnecting with you and coming in, visiting, and giving your perspectives on what you're seeing there on the front lines of deploying AI. I always end these sessions with a question of the day. And right now, I have to ask the audience, you know, what is the single biggest operational or business challenge that you believe AI could solve in your company to deliver real, measurable ROI? If you're not on it, you need to get on it. Cheers, everybody.